It's WGXC 90.7 FM.
Right.
Acra.
Keep going.
Hudson, Catskill, Phoenicia, and lots of other places.
That's an interesting addition.
And Valencia.
And Valencia.
Or as they usually call it when you first land in Columbia County.
Valatie. Very well done. Did you mention the online way
and
to hear?
Online at WGXC.org.
Yes.
Wave Farms WGXC needs your financial support. In these extraordinary and unprecedented times, we know there are many worthy organizations in need. We hope that you consider Wave Farm among them. If you value WGXC and want to keep it a part of your daily life, we ask that you make a tax-deductible contribution to keep local and adventurous content freely available on the Upper Hudson Valley radio dial. Please visit WGXC.org, click Donate, and become a monthly sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. Thank you so much for keeping independent voices and sounds on your radio dial.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You have tuned into the local news from the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org. Go there for more information. I'm Tom Rowe in Acre. Melanie Lukosevic is reporting for Columbia Green Media that an overdose spike alert was issued May 28th for Greene County. Quote, in the last 24 hours, there has been two overdoses in Greene County, unquote, said Carl Quinn, program director for Greener Pathways, community-based outreach program that assists people living with substance abuse. The two overdoses were not fatal. One involved opioids. The drug involved in the second overdose was not identified, Quinn said. An alert is issued when two or more overdoses occur within a 24-hour period. With a spike in the number of overdoses, there are concerns about tainted substances, according to a statement released by Greener Pathways. Quote, be vigilant. This could be indicative of a contaminated drug supply, unquote, according to the statement. Quote, overdoses have occurred in the past for people using crack cocaine and other substances besides opiates, including pressed pills that are made to look like a genuine pill but contain deadly fentanyl instead. Use safety and always assume your supply may be contaminated, unquote. Requests for a free Narcan kit can be made by texting Narcan kit to 21,000. Kits can also be picked up at the Twin County Recovery Services office in Catskill and in Hudson. Help is available by calling Greener Pathways at 518-291-4500. In an emergency, always call 911, Quinn said. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that this week, a measure expanding EpiPen access to include forest rangers, park rangers, and environmental conservation officers were given final approval by lawmakers. The bill now heads to Governor Andrew Cuomo's desk for his consideration before it can become law. Passage was rare for a Republican-backed bill to gain Democratic support. It's rarer still when that bill has a statewide impact. But Democratic State Senator Robert Jackson said Republican Senator Jim Tedesco came together to support the measure that expands who can use an EpiPen. Quote, it's finding common ground when you can, unquote, Tedesco said. Quote, he illustrated when you find common ground, you can get a common good, unquote. The bill could be a boon to people who live and travel to rural areas of New York where emergency health care or a police officer can be up to an hour away. Precious time for someone who is facing a severe allergic reaction. Quote, if COVID has taught us anything, it's that we need to look out for one another, unquote, said Assemblymember Angelino Santa Barbara, Democrat who sponsored the bill in the assembly. Quote, "We need to support one another, and when it comes to the tools to keep people safe, this is one of those tools," unquote. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com. Melanie Lakosovic is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the Green County Youth Fair will return in person this summer. The 67th annual event will be held July 22nd to 25th at Angela Canna Town Park in Cairo. The fair last year was held virtually due to the COVID-19 outbreak, but with declining infection rates, state guidelines now make it possible for the fair to be held in person, said Alex Junk, president of the Green County Agricultural Society. Decisions on mask usage and other protocols will be made closer to the date of the event. Vendors and exhibitors will be required to fill out a health survey, which is mandated by the state, Junk said. Children's exhibits, including animal and agricultural exhibits, will take place and vendors will be on site, but there will be no children's rides. Quote, "We decided not to have rides early in the process because we didn't know what the rules would be, so we figured that would be one step we wouldn't have to worry about," unquote, Junk said. Green County Legislature Chair Patrick Linger agreed, saying, quote, "I do believe it can be done safely. Our infection numbers are coming way down. A good percentage of the population is vaccinated and is outdoors. I think they can do it safely," unquote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And Mid-Hudson News is reporting that Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan has announced that beginning June 1st, all Ulster County offices will open to the general public. Residents entering county office buildings will be required to wear masks unless they provide proof of vaccination. The Ulster County DMV will remain open by appointment only. Quote, "This is a major milestone for our community," unquote, Ryan said. Quote, "While we will be reopening to the public, we will continue to take necessary precautions to keep everyone safe. The health and safety of the 1,400 individuals who work for Ulster County, along with the tens of thousands of residents that we serve, remains of utmost importance to me," unquote. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts more rain is likely on Sunday. There's a 90% chance in the forecast with a high of just 45 degrees. Sunday night rain continues till around 2 a.m. with a low around 43. There's a 40% chance of rain on Monday, mainly before 2 p.m. with a high near 59 and a low around 47. Tuesday should be partly sunny with a high near 71 and a low around 50. You're listening to the radio, WGXC, 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
Contrabassist Stephanie Kunkler sets the music of her group Amonos apart by bringing an accordion into the mix. And we'll hear the enchanting results on the next Deep Threes. Plus, tracks from Blue Cranes and Peripheral Vision. Deep Threes. Where will the music take you?
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Matthew Tombers of Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Green and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is a red alert. Please remain calm. Every precaution will be taken for your protection. Keep your radio tuned to this place on the dial throughout the alert period for information. Telephone service to your home may be cut off to permit military and civil defense authorities to carry out vital operations. Take shelter in your basement or in your nearest shelter area. If you can plug in your radio in the basement, take it with you. Use a portable radio set if you have one. Otherwise, turn up the volume of your radio so that you can hear it in the basement. Keep calm. Don't lose your head. This station will continue to stay on the air throughout the alert period to bring you authentic information and official instructions. Refuse to listen to unauthorized rumors or broadcasts. This is your official broadcast.
in accordance with the authority vested in me, I hereby declare a emergency to exist.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Georgia, and I'm from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Bookish.
Things.
And we're usually joined by some friends, but today we're our own friends, our own only friends today. But good thing, we can talk about books forever.
Yahoo!
And bookish
Imagine
things.
Imagine if we just talked about how great Old Man in the Sea is and then made Amelia watch this.
I still haven't read it and I still want to. Based on what I know of it, I think I might like it.
I would not want to read that. It does seem like a really boring.
I think it might be okay. I don't know. I don't mind a short read that doesn't have too much going on, as long as it's short. So we'll see. I'm going to try at some point. So before we dive into talking about some books, Georgia and I were both on the same event last week. I think it was last week.
Yeah.
With
last week.
Two of my favorite authors and illustrators, but I know at least one of your favorites. I don't know if you've read Vera Broskull.
I've not read Vera Broskull, but I am going to because she is awesome. And Leon, I've heard her name so many times in the live stream that I finally can get her name right. Leon.
I think.
Can't believe I. Okay, so Leon Pham, he is my favorite illustrator.
Yeah, and we watched a video conversation or virtual conversation with Leeuwen Pham and Vera Broskull, who has a new book coming out, or that came out this week actually, called Memory Jars. And so they talked about mostly about the new book, and they read it to us, which was fun. It was like story hour.
Yeah,
for slightly bigger kids. And although there may have been little kids on there too, but then they did some drawing. They had like a, because it's about putting things in jars that aren't necessarily things you normally put in jars.
They showed jars. I loved how Leon was just like, I'm showing you cute little balls of my books and you're showing me teeth and yeast.
Oh, in her jars. Yeah, they all had collections of things in jars.
I like Leon's because I think those are really fun, but I kind of like Vera's a little more because they're really spunky and funny. Mm-hmm. Like she has all of the teeth she's ever lost in a jar, which
that's wild.
But I do that too because when I was little, I was scared of the tooth fairy. And so I have just all my teeth in my special things chest, the bracelet around them.
What if someday the tooth fairy finds them and takes them all?
Oh, evil fairy.
Evil fairies. I know at one point in my childhood home, there were some of my teeth in a drawer, but then my parents like renovated my bedroom. So it's not my bedroom anymore. Like it doesn't look like it anymore. And I don't know what happened to the teeth. I assume they threw them out, but what if my teeth are just somewhere in their house? It's so weird.
That's a little worrisome.
But all the rest of my teeth are in my mouth.
So I have like all 16 of the teeth that I've lost in a chest, like with a bracelet around them.
Just in case you ever need them.
No, when I was little, I was scared of the tooth fairy, and I just haven't gave them to the tooth fairies.
Is your little sister scared of the tooth fairy?
No, she just hasn't lost teeth yet.
Maybe you can lend her some someday, and you can just get part of the cut. Like when she loses her first teeth, you can just donate your teeth through her. Or not donate, but sell them through her to the tooth fairy.
I don't know. I'm probably just going to keep them in that chest. Because now I have 16 adult teeth. I've lost a lot more teeth than most kids my age. 16.
I've lost less teeth than most people my age, I think. I have one baby tooth still that I will have until it rots and falls out of my mouth. Which was hopefully never.
You feel a tooth growing behind it.
I don't. So that's why I have a baby tooth, is because there was no adult tooth. So it's just there. There was nothing to push it out. don't know. So I have one little teeny tiny
great?
Tooth.
What? When I got cavities, I had two on these two adult teeth, so they did the fillings, and then the next time I went to the dentist, I didn't have to get the fillings on the two other teeth because they were baby teeth. I lost them. Like, I really was trying to get them out, and I lost them, so I didn't have to get any more fillings.
Cool.
Yeah, that was really nice for me. I was just like, ah. I mean, fillings aren't horrible. They just aren't great. Once I got a filling and my mom took me to get a cupcake right after, this giant gluten-free cupcake. The cupcake tasted a little weird with the filling, but once I was like halfway through it, I started to get my usual taste back.
Well, that's good. Well, speaking of teeth, I've been talking about teeth for a while, but I thought I could just read the description of Memory Jars since we mentioned that there's this new book out. Okay, so this is Memory Jars. A young girl finds a clever way to keep her favorite things and people close to her forever in memory jars from Caldecott honoree Vera Brosgel. Frida is devastated when she can't eat all the delicious blueberries she's picked. She has to wait a whole year before they're back, and she doesn't want to lose them. Then Gran reminds her that they can save blueberries in a jar as jam. So Frida begins to save all her favorite things. But it turns out that saving everything also means she can't enjoy anything. And Frida realizes that some things are best saved as memories. Yay. So that's the description. What would you save in a jar if you could save anything in a jar? That is tricky, though, because now that we know the moral of the story, that you can't enjoy things when they're in a jar if you save it there forever.
I'd probably save my mom and dad it in a jar. I wouldn't, like, keep them in there forever, just, like, during school. I take them in a little jar in my pocket, and then if anybody messes with me, I'll just be like, here's my mom and dad. Say hi, mom and dad. Say hi to these haters.
You, like, twist off the top. Release, yeah. Mom and dad. Get them.
Just let them sing.
Would they be, like, normal-sized when they come out of the jar, or would they be teeny tiny?
They'd be normal-sized.
Okay.
But, like, they'd come out of the jar. Like, they wouldn't be sad to be in the jar. They'd, like, want to. And then, like, after school's done, I'll just take them out. Mm. They'll sleep in their beds. They'll do everything normal.
I have something that I've had in a jar since preschool that I love. When I was in preschool, we made snow globes using little jars. So it's a tiny jar. It's maybe a little bit bigger than, like, a baby food jar.
Aww.
And it has a little rabbit figurine in it. And then we made snow out of paper that I think must have had some kind of, like, maybe it was waxed paper or something. And so we cut it with, like, a hole punch to make the snow, and then filled it with water and then glued on the lid. So now it's like a little snow globe, and I still have it from preschool, except some of the water is evaporated.
Oh no.
But it still works. It's only about a centimeter has evaporated since preschool, and I'm pretty old, so.
You aren't old.
In the realm of things, if only a centimeter's gone and it goes at the same pace throughout time, that thing should still have water in it enough to be a snow globe when I move on to wherever one moves on to at the end of life. So.
Yeah. So. I love when you said, speaking of teeth, let's talk about memory jars.
And moving on from teeth, we're a book show, you know?
Yeah.
So do you have a book you wanted to talk about?
Actually, I want to change it up. Mm. You go first.
Okay, I can go first.
You never go first, so this time first.
So I read a book that is a graphic novel adaptation of a chapter book for kids that I've actually never read, but I've always wanted to read. And then I saw that it was made into a graphic novel, and so I decided to read that instead. And it is called Turtle in Paradise. It's by Jennifer L. Holm, with illustrations by Savannah Ganuchot. And who did the colors? Let me see if it says. I think it was Lark Pien. Let me see. I want to give credit to the colorist, because they did a beautiful job. Let's see. Boo, boo, boo. Yeah, Lark Pien did the colors. And so the book, I don't know when Turtle in Paradise first came out, but it's been out for quite some time. And Jennifer Holm, you might know from, she does some comics. So she does the Baby Mouse series and Squish and the Sunny books. But this is a standalone. And yes, yeah, so based on the chapter book of the same name, and it's set during the Great Depression. And the main character's name is Turtle. And she's a young girl and she lives with her mom. And her mom gets a job as a housekeeper, but the person that she works for does not like kids. So her mom sends her down to Key West to live with her aunt. So she moves down to Key West and she gets there and her aunt didn't realize that she was coming. So that's, you know, a good start. And she meets all of these cousins that she has. She has like all these cousins that she's never met before. And they're all boys. And so she's the only girl in this like crew of kids. And it's sort of about her time there, but they have like all sorts of different things that happen. So she's getting to know her family, finding her place in this new area. And then there's some mysterious stuff related to like pirate treasure. But it kind of is more like just about her time in Key West and her adventures with the Diaper Gang is the name the kids go by, because they have this wagon that they pull around town and they take care of babies. So like they go to their neighbor's house that has a baby and they take care of the babies. They don't get paid for it though. So it's a little confusing why they do it, but I guess they want to have a purpose and a place. But yeah, it's really fun. I like all the characters. It's interesting seeing her find her place amongst this like gaggle of boys.
That's so cool. That sounds like a great book. I will be sure to read that sometime.
Yeah, that's really pretty. I don't know. So I read it from a preview copy that I got as an ebook. And so I'm not sure exactly if this will all be in the final printing, but I assume it will be. But at the end of the book, they have a little thing from the author and the illustrator. So from the author, she talks about sort of the historic context of the book. So both like how it ties into history and the place of Key West, but also about her family history and who inspired certain characters. It's not at all a memoir, but there are some connections to her family history. And then the illustrator shows how she made the illustrations. So she did it all on Photoshop. So it was all done on a computer. And she shows like the different stages and then like kind of went at the point where she hands it off to the colorist, because then somebody else goes in and does all the colors.
That's so cool.
And I always enjoy seeing sort of the process behind comic books and graphic novels. I find it interesting, even though I have no interest in doing it myself.
I do.
Yeah, so that's Turtle in Paradise by Jennifer Holm. The illustrations by Savannah Ganesho and colors by Lark Pien. And that actually comes out in June on my birthday. So June 29th, celebrate my birthday by reading this good book.
So I will be sharing a book that most radio listeners, if you love books, you've probably heard of this one or read this one. It's not very old, but I think of it a little bit as a classic because a lot of people have read it. Holes.
Holes. I read that a long time ago. Who's it by?
By Louis Sacker. And Holes is about a boy named Stanley who gets sent to a boys' detention center where they have to dig holes. But then he wonders, what if the headmaster is actually trying to get them to look for something? So he goes on a whole adventure to try find the truth. So here is the description. Stanley Yelnats is under a curse. A curse that began with his no-good, dirty-rotten, pig-stealing great-great-grandfather has since followed generations of Yelnatses. Now Stanley has been unjustly sent to a boys' detention center, Camp Green Lake, where the boys build character by spending all day digging holes exactly 5 feet wide and 5 feet deep. There is no lake at Camp Green Lake, but there are an awful lot of holes. It doesn't take long for Stanley to realize that Camp Green Lake isn't what it seems. Are the boys digging holes because the warden is looking for something? But what could be buried under a dried up lake? It's up to Stanley to dig up the truth.
It's been a really long time since I've read that, but I remember loving it when I did. I think I read it like 10 or 15 years ago. Can't remember. Did you read that recently?
Last summer. This summer in COVID.
And what did you like about it?
Everything.
Everything. I forget exactly what I liked about it, but I think I kind of liked the mystery and like the kids trying to like find out what was going on. And I think it's also interesting that it's like all of the characters or all of the kid characters are like kids that are deemed to be troublemakers, but then they're like trying to figure out maybe the adults are actually the troublemakers. Who knows? That's cool.
It's so awkward when it's just silence. It's like,
I was trying to think what we should talk about next.
I have an idea. Okay, so Emily and I are going to do top 5 favorite video games or computer games, and this is totally unrelated. A fun little thing.
Not totally unrelated.
So,
well, I feel
not
like
totally
also, games also often have storylines to them. They don't always, but that ties into our book story thing.
Yeah. So let's start 5 and go to our favorite. So 5 for me would probably be Disney Bounce. It's a Disney computer game on the Disney Now website. Well,
what do you like about that?
Well, it's like you play Disney characters and then you do little games. There's like digital volleyball, digital snowboarding, digital long jump, and digital what else? Digital skiing. My favorite is snowboarding. I'm not very good at downhill skiing, and the downhill skiing is also really hard. And then the long jump, all that you have to do is just send it off in the right stroke, and then boom, it's done. Number 4 for me. That one's tricky. I am going to say, T-Runner. So I would recommend this for anybody who loves educational but feels like it's not really educational video iPad games. So it's where you're a runner and you run and you come against real people, though you can't talk, which is good. So you run through and it stops you off and you have to enter as quick as you can a word in the category that they give you with the letter that they give you. And it really helps improve spelling and also fast thinking. Then number 3 for me. I know what number 1 is. I know what number 2 is. Number 3. That one is so tough. Okay. See, this doesn't really count, but really any personality quiz.
We can make it count. This is our radio show. We do what we want.
Yeah.
So any personality quiz online.
Yeah. Any personality quiz. 2 is Disney Emoji Blitz. It's where you like get emojis and then you like can actually use the emojis once you earn them to text. Like it uploads them to your text emojis so you can actually use like Disney emojis. So like I can use Simba emoji. Number 1, the greatest of all. Dun dun! Heart Lake Rush. This is actually a Lego game and it is available on computer as a web game. But for a much better experience, more sayings, and more players, I would recommend the iPad version. Ta-da! Emily, your turn.
Yeah, mine are going to be weird. trying to decide how to do it. It's hard to rank them. So I guess I'm going to do, let me show you, 2 more recent games and then 3 like really old games. Like you'd have to find like a simulator online to play them. But they're ones that I played when I was younger. So one that I played during the pandemic, I haven't played in a while, but I played it and I got Jada, our radio co-host, got really into it for a little bit. And my nephew and my sister got really into it. It was really fun. It's called Alchemy or Little Alchemy. And I think it's actually Alchemy 2 is the name of the app. But you can play it online or you can play it on an app. And it's a game where you basically start with just like basic elements. And then using those, you start building a world.
That looks really cool. I love world building.
Yeah, it's really fun. The downside is it doesn't have every possible thing that you could want. So like sometimes you put things together that make sense that they would make something and they don't. But then sometimes you can make really fun things. I don't want to spoil anything, but sometimes like if you have a cow and the ocean and you put them together, you get something really fun. You get a sea cow, also known as a manatee. So So I spoiled one for everybody. But there's things like that that you can make happen that are really fun. So then in the four position, I'm going to put a Google game called Loteria, which is really fun, or I guess sort of fun. I don't know. I can spend a lot of time playing it when I remember that it exists and then play it for a little while. But it's basically like bingo, but in Spanish. And it, instead of having like lines that you create, each round you have different layouts. So it might be like you have to get all in a row, or it might be you need like every corner, or it might mean you need the center tiles. But it's fun because it's also like you can learn some Spanish words because there's all these different cards that are in Spanish and they say them in Spanish. So you have visual cues. So it's not just that you have to know Spanish to play, but it's a fun way to learn some words. So that's in my four position. And then for 3, 2, 1, I'm going to go with some like old school games that I remember playing as a kid. And at least some of them, you can find simulations of them online. So in the three position, I'm going to put Life and Death, which is a game that I played a lot as a kid. And I often think of it whenever somebody has appendicitis or has has similar symptoms, because the game was literally you were a doctor, or you were maybe a like medical intern or something, but you were somebody that was like going in to see patients. And they'd have like this close-up of the stomach and you poke them in different spots. And like based on their reaction to you poking around and their symptoms, you diagnose them with having like kidney stones or dehydration. I forget what else, but appendicitis was like the big one. So if they have the other things, you either like suggest bed rest or suggest some medication. But if they have appendicitis, you have to rush them to the OR and do surgery. And then you do a appendectomy using, in the old days, it was like a pretty rough mouse to like try to make incisions and stop bleeding. And I don't know that I ever successfully completed a surgery, because you would inevitably be called out of surgery because you, like somebody had to fill in for you to save the patient. And then you have to go back to school and like learn what you did wrong. And then at one point, they used to have all these things on games, which I don't know if they do anymore, but they'd have like something that you needed to type in occasionally to show that you had the original game, because they were worried about people like just all sharing the same game, like copying the disc to their computers. And so we had this little pager. And so you needed the pager in order to like keep the game going, or else you'd get pulled out of surgery for not answering your pages. And we lost the pager at one point. So that cut my surgery career. So that's that. So don't trust me if you have a appendix burst. I should not do your surgery. Okay. So that was the 3 spot. Okay. So in the 2 spot, I'm going to put a game called Winter Games, which was a computer game that had all these different winter sports. And, or was it that one? It was either Winter Games or World Games. All I know is that there was skiing and log rolling. The skiing one was really fun. The log rolling was pretty boring, but I talk about it all the time because it was literally just like you ran by moving 2 fingers.
Okay, that does seem familiar.
But I once lost a bet because based on this game, I thought that log rolling was an Olympic sport and it's not, because I had the wrong game in mind. But as you can see, I still am confused because I don't know if it was World Games or Winter Games. But I think that was the one where the skiing, like every once in a while, a Yeti would come and eat you as you're skiing down the ski slope.
Yeah, that's probably Winter Games.
And you'd often like run into trees and there were jumps and stuff like that. But yeah, it was fun. Old school sports. Okay. And then in the number one spot, another old school game that I know you can get as a simulation because my nephew got really into it a couple years back. It's called Gold Rush. And it's a story game where you're a character and you start out in Brooklyn. And I think you get a letter from your brother that he's struck gold in California. And so you decide to like pack up your bags and go find your brother and, you know, make it rich with him. But then, so you have to like figure out how to leave town, and then you have to get on a boat or get on a stagecoach and like decide if you're going through Panama or around South America. And then you have to make it there, and then you have to figure out how to get to your brother.
That looks so cool. Could you put that in the chat, please? That sounds amazing.
I also don't know, because I don't know how many of these games still exist, but it was one of those games from back in like the 80s or 90s where you had to type certain prompts to like make things happen. So you want to talk to someone, you have to be like, talk to man or say hello or like open box. Like you have to type these commands into them, look That's around. Weird. And then you have to try to figure things out.
Should we maybe go over our list one more time for our radio listeners?
Sure.
List. Okay, so number 5 is Disney Bounce. Number 4 is ABC Runner. Number 3 is Any Personality Quiz. Number 2 is Disney Emoji Blitz. And number 1 is Heartlake Crush.
And my top 5 are 5 is Little Alchemy 2. 4 is Loteria, 3 is Life and Death, 2 is either Winter Games or World Games, I will never know, and 1 is Gold Rush.
Woohoo!
So those are our suggested computer games.
Yay!
Personality quizzes are great, so.
Well, Disney Emoji Blitz technically is a computer game, neither is ABC Runner.
Live. Lead you all astray. Those were like iPad games or?
Yeah, those are.
Okay. Apps. That's fine. We'll count it.
Heartlake Rush, there's a web version and an app version. The app version is a lot better. The web version is just more like an ad for the app. The app is better. Obviously, they're probably just like giving you a bad experience that you can get to the good stuff. Okay. Anyways.
I think we're just about out of time for today.
Yeah.
But we hope everyone out there listening has a great week with lots of quality reading time and maybe some fun gameplay.
Yes.
We'll be back next week to talk about some more books. Until then,
happy reading.
Bye. Da da di di do do da do da di do da di da da di da 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 da.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Art Omai in Ghent, New York. Open daily from dawn until dusk. Art Omai Sculpture and Architecture Park presents the work of contemporary artists and architects across 120 acres of field and forest. Now accepting advance registrations for visits on weekends and select holidays. Information at artomai.org.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking with Barbara Heisen, who is a resident of the Queens area, as well as a member of the Clean Air Coalition of the Greater Ravenna Queens, and wanted to get a quick update on the ongoing struggle to stop the burning of tires at the Ravenna cement plant. But also there's been some legislation that's been pushed related to low carbon concrete, which many environmentalists are not enthusiastic about. So Barbara, I understand things have been relatively quiet with the issue of burning tires and the general performance of Ravenna, the cement plant, Lafarge. But what are some of the key points, maybe just in the last few months, that not everybody's heard about?
Well,
I realize as you describe this as relatively quiet, that it's relatively quiet in the sense that nothing terrible has happened. In fact, we've had two big decisions that are very good for improving the environment and the pollution coming from the wholesome cement plant here in Ravenna. One decision was a fine for $850,000 that was for polluting the Queemans and the Hanakoi Creek by allowing water to be released from holding ponds that are used by the cement plant. The other decision was a decision by the New York Department of Environmental Conservation, who said that they will not be including a permit to burn tires when the wholesome cement plant renews its clean air permit sometime in the next month or two, and that the ability to burn tires will not be included in that permit. And that's a great win for the Clean Air Coalition.
But I do understand that if the owners, you know, want to pursue that, they can make that request to the State Department of Environmental Conservation to consider that.
Yes, they can. I think they've run out of time now to challenge the decision, but they can apply for a new permit that would be one saying, please, can you let us burn tires now? But one of the reasons that the New York DEC said it would not be included was that they said that the cement plant is not equipped to handle tires and that they need to have a lot more investments to be able to do so.
You know, there was a couple of years ago a town law that was passed to, basically stop the burning of tires. But then the opponents of, such restrictions went out with the support of the company and one controlled the town. And they fought to change it. I understand that there is a group of people who are now, sort of running in this new election cycle to try to, reframe that issue for local residents.
Yes, exactly. When the last election was held in November 2019, the opponents of the strong clean air law in Queemans, who were all supported by Carver Laraway, who owns support of Queemans, and the Lafarge Wholesome Cement Plant, the opponents of the clean air law won the election, but during the election, they promised that they would not repeal the clean air law that had been passed by the previous administration. What they did instead was that they amended it so that anybody, any business can now burn solid waste in Queemans, but by amending it and not repealing the law, they have made it impossible for the Albany clean air law to have any effect on burning solid waste in Queemans. And that's where an obscure legal technicality that I won't bore your listeners with, but it means we now have no protection against burning rubbish and solid waste here in the town of Queemans.
Now, one of the things I've seen recently is that, I guess it's some member Bobby Carroll, usually a fairly liberal member from the Park Slope neighborhood in Brooklyn, has put out a proposal related to so-called low-carbon cement. Progressive environmentalists had a number of problems with it, though some of the mainstream groups have been supporting it. I understand that he amended the bill recently, but if anything, probably made it worse. What's the problem with what the assembly and I guess the legislature is talking about with respect to low-carbon cement?
There are two major problems with the original law. One is that it put a lot of faith in the ability of the cement industry to introduce carbon capture and storage, which assumes that you can suck the CO2 out of your smokestacks and shove it underground or include it in the concrete mix somehow, and therefore the CO2 is no longer going in the air. This technology is still largely unproven. It is very expensive. And as a colleague of mine in the oil industry says, it's always going to be workable tomorrow. And carbon capture and storage has been discussed in the oil industry for at least 20 or 30 years. It has never been adopted in an effective way. So that's one problem, is that the bill in its original form relied too much on carbon capture and storage. The other problem I had with the bill was that it ignored the fact that making cement is an inherently carbon intensive industry. And that's not just because of the high amounts of fuel that are needed, but because when you convert limestone to cement, the process itself, the chemical reaction that's involved, releases a lot of carbon dioxide. And that increases the CO2 that goes into the atmosphere. Apparently, in most concrete mixes, something like 80% of the CO2 in that mix that's been produced by that mix comes from the cement, not the mixture of cement and aggregate that is what makes up concrete. So the bill never addressed that high CO2 footprint of cement. So those are the two problems.
Yes, I understand that cement worldwide is something like almost 8% of greenhouse gas emission. It's probably, along with aluminum, the two major industrial processes which have a huge, huge carbon footprint. And even though the Romans 2,000 years ago figured out how to do it, our present technology has not been able to eliminate the carbon emissions.
Exactly. And so by definition, cement as it is made today is very carbon intensive. So that was the original bill obscured that whole aspect of the issue. And then they said, no, don't worry about it. When people raised objections, they said, we are going to amend the bill. But the amendments that we saw today didn't address any of these issues. They just kicked the whole problem into a committee. And they said that General Services in New York State will define what low carbon cement is. And they will create this definition with the help of an advisory committee of about 14 members. And nearly all the members are members of the cement industry or people who are very closely tied up with the cement and concrete industry, with one or two exceptions.
Right.
So it's really the industry defining the standard of what is low carbon cement and low carbon concrete, rather than health officials, climate activists, environmentalists, and it looks to me like a stitch up by the industry, and no one should be supporting this bill.
And the Office of General Services is not exactly a group that actually knows anything about production or manufacturing. They're probably most notorious for actually being the ones that owned and operated the Albany Ansys garbage incinerator 30 years ago, which eventually got shut down. In the Arbor Hill neighborhood. And then more recently, they were technically the owners of the proposed fossil fuel plant to add to the power at Sheridan Avenue. And that was also defeated. So we're out of time, Barbara Heisen. If people want to find out more what's going on with down in Queemans and Lafarge, what's the best way for them to keep in touch?
They should go to the cleanairalbanycounty.org website, and you'll see the latest updates on what we're doing. And thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
We're talking with Dan Wilcox, a local poet and peaked activist. I've often interviewed Dan, particularly in conjunction with the annual Veterans for Peace contingent that participates in the annual Memorial Day parade. That is not, you know, taking place this year, still recovering from COVID. But, you know, Dan, why did Veterans for Peace decide to, you know, join the Memorial Day parade? And what was the initial reception when you tried to do that?
Well, actually, there were some informal attempts by many of us local peace activists over the years to join either the Memorial Day Parade or the Veterans Day Parade in November earlier on for one particular event or another. I think it was 1999 I contacted them formally, and asked about joining the parade. And that was during the Kosovo, whatever you call it, war, I guess.
The Balkan War, yeah.
Yeah. And so we started that year. The fellow coordinating it was a former Green Beret, but he was actually very much on our side, even though he belonged to more traditional veterans organizations. And he was kind of reluctant, but I think he was smart enough to know that if he said no, my next phone call would have been to the media, basically saying a group called Veterans for Peace would not be allowed to march in the Memorial Day Parade, and which I think they wanted to avoid. So we were allowed in for that. And then we following in the fall, we were allowed in for the Veterans Day Parade. For the next couple years, I would call them each time there was a parade and remind them we were interested. And eventually it got to the point where we were actually getting the parade orders in the mail, unsolicited. So we became an official part of both parades up until 2019.
And what was the reception both from, you know, other veterans marching and any passerbys?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of veterans, even the ones who were marching with the traditional groups, didn't like, for especially the Iraq War, any more than we did. And they would be on our side. They may not be very vocal about it, but I would get messages, so we say, from them. There were a few people, notably folks who started joining the parade on motorcycles in recent years. And some of those folks were a little upset that we were there. But the people along the parade route applauded for us as much or perhaps more than they did for, they would always applaud for like the school groups, the high school marching bands and things like that. But we always got a very positive reception from the citizens along the parade route.
So, you know, what are your thoughts about Memorial Day this year?
Well, you know, Memorial Day is always with us, I suppose. It was started back after the Civil War to honor the dead of the Civil War. And then after World War I, people realized, well, wars are going on and we need to honor those who were killed. My particular take on this each year is that we're not just honoring the military veterans, and often they say the military victims of the war. We're all victims of war, and civilians have died in greater quantities than the military for many years, mostly after the First World War, escalating up to now, where it's mostly civilians and rarely military people who are killed.
Now, you are a poet. How has poetry been impacted? I know you do often have done, you know, open mic type of nights. How has that been impacted by COVID? And do you have a, you know, poem you want to share with us?
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, COVID has had an interesting impact on the poetry scene. I used to run a monthly open mic at the Social Justice Center, in-person event, and I stopped doing that as soon as, like last March, as soon as it became apparent that we really shouldn't be doing those kind of things. With the advent of Zoom, well, actually Zoom was around long before that, but with the greater use of Zoom, I actually attend quite a few poetry events throughout the month. And one of the ironies is that if I held a poetry open mic on Zoom, I can get people attending who don't even live around here. My friend Charlie Rossiter, who's in Bennington, does one, and he gets about 8-9 people at his open mic every month on Zoom. And some of those people dial in from Chicago, dial in from Florida, dial in from other places in the country. Whereas when he did the in-person event over in Bennington in his bar, he would get maybe 4 or 5 people for the open mic. So it's a mixed bag of things. I like the being there in person because I like the hugs from the other poets, and you know, I like meeting them and I like seeing them. So I decided not to do a Zoom for the third Thursday, and I'm contemplating starting up the third Thursday open mic in Albany at the Social Justice Center in September.
Okay. So you have a poem? What's the poem?
Yeah, interesting. I went through looking for poems for this, and this one I pulled out was actually from Memorial Day 1999, which was the first year that we marched officially, Veterans for Peace. And when we march, we invite other like-minded citizens and peace groups to join us. And that's what this is about. Memorial Day 1999. The snap of the snare drums, the military beat of the bass drum, the bands played the Marine hymn, the Air Force song, the Stars and Stripes Forever. Misnamed marches humming us to death. Fake rifles snapped to real soldiers' shoulders. What the crowd came to expect on Memorial Day in the parade. But this year, a peace division marched too, with signs and aging draftees and veterans of the Cold War, with Junsan and other bodhisattvas from the Peace Pagoda sending out another beat on flat, round drums, chanting the Sutra of the Lotus of the Wonderful Law, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, slow, meditative, on and on, the beat of the flat drum. This is not the way soldiers were taught to march. One, two, three, four, one, two, three. One, two, three, four, one, two, three. No cymbal crash, no drum roll. One, two, three, four, one, two, three. The curved wooden sticks against the thin drums. One, two, three, four, one, two, three. Namu myoho renge kyo. Namu myoho renge kyo. Until the bands, the high school cadets, the old veterans themselves stumble, fall out of step with the military and lose the rhythm of guns and war and march to the beat of world peace.
Well, thank you, Dan. About 90 seconds left. I'm going to give you a two-part question. I don't know if you can answer both of them.
All right.
One is that we're about allegedly to end or de-escalate from the longest war that America has been involved in, the Afghanistan war. And then at the same time, certainly the longest conflict in my generation, the Israeli-Palestinian continues. Any thoughts from Veterans for Peace on either one of those?
Well, you know, from February, March of 2003, we were against our troops being in Afghanistan. They should be out of there. The problem is, with all these kind of conflict, once you put troops in there and then you pull them out, other things happen in the dynamics of the whatever the invaded country is. And it's the same thing with the Israelis and the Palestinians. And there, the story is somewhat different because the Palestinians are occupied. They're in an occupied country. And I mean, it shows you how bad war is no matter what. And what we have to do is stop these things before they start, because once they start, they're hard to get out of.
So we've been talking with Dan Wilcox, local peace activist and poet. Dan, if people want to quickly find out more about Veterans for War, particularly Reflections of Memorial Day, or about your poetry, how can we do that in the next 20 seconds?
All right. The best thing for Veterans for Peace is veteransforpeace.org. That's the best site. And then there's a wonderful site for poetry in the local area, albanypoets.com.
Thank you very much, Dan Wilcox. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
This is Nature Note with Angela Gibbons of Earthwalk Vermont.
Today I'm feeling thankful for the magnificent ruby-throated hummingbird. I've grown to love that buzzing sound as I watch this tiny bundle of energy dive bomb the flowers at our house. Our nickname for our friend is Hummer. Hummer has returned, and we sure are glad to see him. And, of course, his girlfriend, too. The male hummingbird is iridescent green with a white breast and a ruby scarlet-colored throat. The female has a white throat. Hummingbirds winter in Central America. In the spring, the tiny birds make the amazing journey northward, up to 2,500 miles. Ruby-throated hummingbirds are about 3 inches long and weigh less than a nickel. these speedy little acrobatic birds can be